Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review for today, March 6th, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Windows on History in Decatur Church. This is by Tony Reed, Herald and Review staff writer from Decatur. The Church of the Living God, PGT4, is stained with an inherited history no one knew much about. That history was always there, looming over every Sunday sermon, every impassioned Bible study, every song, every meeting. A triptych of stained glass windows forming a rear guard to the pews on the west wall of the church on East Cleveland Avenue turns out to be its own translucent hymn to the Grand Army of the Republic, the Civil War Union Veterans Organization founded in Decatur. The church was built in 1925 as the Cleveland Avenue Methodist Church, and the striking window was a gift from the Dunham Post, the first GAR unit established in the nation 59 years earlier at the GAR's founding. The window's central panel features a reproduction of the medal GAR members wore so proudly, a five-pointed star hanging from an American flag of 13 stars beneath cross cannons surmounted by an eagle with outstretched wings clutching a saber in its talons. Crowning that is an in memoriam commemorating the founding of the GAR on April 6, 1866. To either side are precisely geometric panels picked out in greens and blues with red jeweled highlights honoring the Dunham Post and the Dunham WRC. The WRC stood for Women's Relief Corps, the female auxiliary organization of the GAR. It's an unusual subject for stained glass church windows, which normally concern themselves with visions of heaven and pictorial retellings of beloved stories from the Bible. Congregation member Dora Thurman says everybody notices the pretty colored glass. Now it's nice to know we have some history in the windows, she said. Bishop E.F. Gray, Jr., the pastor, said his church took over spiritual duties at the former Methodist House of Worship in 1999, and no one was around to give him a window tutorial when he arrived. Now, having discovered their illustrious history, he's comforted by the sense of being sheltered and guarded by a legacy from the past. From the time this church was built, these windows have withstood all the storms, all the tornadoes, all of the rain, all of the wind, he added. They are well made and constructed of valuable material. Just why did the GAR want to memorialize itself in the stained glass of a small city church? The Decatur Herald newspaper didn't have much to say about the why at the time, but a full report on page 3 of the September 14, 1925 paper gave a detailed account of the pomp and circumstance surrounding the dedication of the memorial window during the dedication of the church itself. Mayor Elmer Elder presided during the afternoon with Dunham Post Commander W.F. Calhoun conducting the dedicatory services. W. Davenport, a member of the Post, read a poem. Mrs. Julia Boo, president of the WRC, spoke, and there were talks by Mrs. Cora B. Ryman and Mrs. Inez J. Bender. And if that wasn't enough, the Dunham Post Fife and Drum Corps was on hand to provide suitably martial music while a male quartet sang. By the time of the Cleveland Avenue Church dedication, however, the music most often accompanying GAR members was the sound of taps played at their funerals. At its height in the 1890s, the organization had boasted a nationwide membership of some 445,000 Civil War Union veterans. But those ranks had thinned dramatically by the turn of the 20th century. The last surviving member of the original Decatur Post, C.H. Collins, died in 1942. And the very last GAR member, Albert Woolson of Duluth, Minnesota, faded away at the age of 109 in 1956. He had been a Union drummer boy at Gettysburg and is now honored with his own statue on that blood-soaked battlefield. But while the GAR may have beat the retreat from life, the Decatur Windows, bought as a bridgehead to immortality, still stand proudly. They stand proudly 92 years after they were put in, clearly well cared for by the congregation that inherited them. Gray said whoever does the church cleaning that week takes care of the windows. Sometimes we just don't realize we are wiping upon history, he said with a smile, but you can never wipe history away. And some of the photographs accompanying the article include Bishop E.F. Gray Jr. pictured with the historic Grand Army of the Republic stained glass window, and a close-up of a star in the window. The historic Grand Army of the Republic window features a depiction of a medal worn by GAR veterans. And that's a five-pointed star with the words Grand Army of the Republic, Veteran 1861 to 1866. And then finally, a colorful portion of the window, the Grand Army of the Republic window, created as a memorial to Union Civil War veterans. Also from the front page, this is by Donette Beckett, Herald and Review staff writer. Little started a seed that continues to grow in theater. This is from Sullivan. Guy Little Jr. had not been part of the daily operations of the theater that bears his name in more than 35 years, but many in the area weren't aware of his retirement. People still think Guy runs the theater, said Little Theater on the Square business manager Lori Harbaugh. Little passed away at the age of 82 on Friday, the opening night of the theater's spring production, 8-track, The Sounds of the 70s. Although he was no longer active in running the business, he continued to attend opening night performances. The current directors and managers dedicated Friday's show to the theater's founder by laying flowers on his seat. This year marks the theater's 60th anniversary. Executive Director John Stevens had planned to honor Little during the special celebration scheduled for June 3rd. Instead, we will be dedicating the season to him, Stevens said. Both Harbaugh and Stevens credit Little for the success they and the theater have achieved. Harbaugh's mother worked in the theater, allowing her to grow up at the Little Theater. I went to the shows as a child and always knew Guy, she said. Harbaugh watched Little do whatever needed to be done to run a theater, from cleaning toilets to chauffeuring stars. Little also did what was expected to produce a play or musical by directing shows or performing on stage. The small town he chose for his Broadway-quality theater limited his possibilities, but not for long. Little opened the theater in 1957 with the hopes of bringing big-name celebrities and actors to Sullivan. Stars such as Ann B. Davis, Colleen Zenk, Susan Seaforth Hayes, and Bill Hayes often traveled to central Illinois to work with Little. Many of his favorite stars came back to the theater for the 50th anniversary 10 years ago, Stevens said. On his first full day on the job at the Little Theater in 2006, Stevens met the founder and was invited to his home. Soap opera star Rosemary Prinz was visiting at the time, making Stevens starstruck by meeting two important people in the theater industry. That was surreal to get to meet those people, he said. Stevens contacted many of the surviving actors after Little's death on Friday. During their conversations, they relayed memories of Little and their time in the theater. Little Theater on the Square helped give Sullivan a reputation not only with actors, but with theater lovers as well. He left a legacy for this town and the community, Harbaugh said. Although Little was no longer a part of the theater business, he would visit to discuss his history with show business. When he started in theater, it was a very different time, Stephen said. There wasn't cable television, internet, tabloid magazines, nothing to see what celebrities were doing. Having the stars come to Sullivan was everything to people here. Those in the community could see a celebrity at the show, go to dinner, and run into the stars at the restaurant. According to Stevens, Sullivan became a mecca for people to run into a soap opera star or movie actor. The directors and managers continue to make quality shows and are making new stories. Guy did the same, Stevens said. We have people opportunities to start their careers in a professional... He gave people opportunities to start their careers in a professional way. When he began his theater, Little's mother controlled the box office, while his father was the business manager. Everything else was the job of Little. That work ethic hasn't changed as Harbaugh, Stevens, and other staff are found cleaning bathrooms and transporting actors, musicians, and other artists. We are able to continue his dream, Stevens said. He started a seed that continues to grow. And some of the photographs that accompany the article, the first is from a 1992 Little Theater production of West Side Story. And the second picture shows the late Guy Little Jr. standing in front of photos of two of the most popular Little Theater productions, Fiddler on the Roof and Godspell in 1975. Another article from the front page, Cubs Trophy Display Rules Set. Here's how to see the Cubs Trophy in Decatur. It's just a 30-pound piece of sterling silver with 30 gold-plated flags, and yet for 3 months fans of the Chicago Cubs have flocked to see it, standing in long lines as though this was the Holy Grail. That's because in the world of Major League Baseball, the Commissioner's Trophy, designed by Tiffany and Company and awarded to the World Series winner, is the Holy Grail. And it becomes even more cherished when your team hasn't won the series in 108 years. The Chicago Cubs 2016 World Series Trophy makes its way to Decatur on Thursday, and there's no telling how many fans will wait in line for a chance to have a picture taken next to it. It will be on display at the Decatur Civic Center for less than 2 hours from 8 to 9:30 a.m., then will be whisked off to Peoria for another viewing. Mike Lufrano, Senior Vice President of Community Affairs for the Cubs, said the State Farm Trophy Tour will have made close to 140 stops by the time the team has its home opener on April 10th at Wrigley Field. It will have been in 8 states and traveled 16,000 miles, he said, noting that the trophy was already in Arizona prior to the Cubs' first spring training game. The goal is to give as many people as possible a chance to view the trophy and celebrate the world championship with us. So that begs many questions about the trophy's arrival in Decatur this week. Here is some information that could help fans enjoy their chance to have their picture taken next to a trophy that has already been held by all their Cubs heroes. Question: how can I be assured I'll get my picture taken with the trophy? Answer: the first 500 fans in line are guaranteed to have their moment with the trophy. Wristbands will be given to those first 500, but the Cubs have discovered that if the line moves quickly, more can and will be accommodated. If things move smoothly, we might get 1,000 or more, said Chris Brodnicki, general manager of the Civic Center, who has handled the logistics for this stop on the trophy tour. Question: when and where should we line up? Based on their experiences at other stops on the tour, the Cubs have told us people may be in line as early as 3 a.m., Brudnicki said. Fans arriving before 6 a.m. are asked to line up outside the Civic Center along the front of the building, then east of the main entrance on the sidewalk, and continuing east toward Jackson Street. Stay on the sidewalks and away from any traffic that might be entering or exiting the parking lots. Question: where can we park? Answer: visitors can park in the Decatur Civic Center parking lot free of charge. Question: is there any cost at all? Answer: nope, the event is free. Question: what if it's cold? Answer: well, wear warm clothing. No overnight shelter will be provided, but the Civic Center doors will open at 6 a.m., and Brudnicki said he believes he can get 500 people inside the main lobby to get them out of the weather until the viewing begins at 8 a.m. on the stage of the theater. Also, a vending booth will be set up outside and will open at 5 a.m. It will sell coffee, hot chocolate, and donuts. Question: what about restrooms? Answer: restrooms inside the Civic Center will be available at 6 a.m. Brudnicki hopes fans will be helpful and understanding, allowing others to leave the line to use the restrooms, then return to their place in line. I don't want any fighting over anything like that, he said. That's not the Decatur way. Question: once the trophy viewing begins at 8 a.m., how will it work? Answer: fans who want a picture taken with the trophy will need to bring their own camera or cell phone. Make sure batteries are charged. Do not put your phone on Zoom. A worker will take your camera and will take the picture for you, then hand back your camera. No videos. This process will happen quickly, so fix your hair and practice your smiling pose in advance. Your ability to move quickly through the process will allow other fans to have the same experience. Can a group photo be taken? Yes, but just one photo will be taken, not seven photos with seven different cameras for seven people. You'll be responsible for distributing the photo to your friends. Lufrano of the Cubs said he's seen some touching moments. We've had a father and son, along with a grandfather and great-grandfather, four generations. In every case, it's been unadulterated happiness and joy. Question: what do we do with coats and purses during the photo shoot? Answer: those will be collected and set to the side. You can retrieve them immediately after your picture has been taken. Question: what about props? Say, I want to pose with a baseball bat. Answer: only if viewed by the Cubs as appropriate. This is supposed to be a positive experience. Be reasonable. Question: any other tips? Answer: yes. Kent Brown, University of Illinois Associate Athletics Director in charge of media relations, helped when the trophy visited Champaign. He noticed people were so concerned with getting the photo taken that they forgot to even look at the trophy. Take 5 seconds to actually look at it, he said. You know, who knows when they'll get a chance again. Decatur City Councilman Jerry Dawson is a Cubs fan, and when contacted late last week, he was in Phoenix to watch the Cubs play an exhibition game. But he promised he'd be back in time for the trophy tour and that he'd look forward to having his picture taken. Heck yeah, Dawson said. I've been waiting 108 years. A photo accompanying the article shows a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan, Jerry Decker, 78, of Bloomington, admiring the World Series trophy displayed at Illinois Wesleyan University's Shirk Center. And from the local page, Chris Luzvardi, Herald and Review staff writer, writes, "Demolitions, Focus of Decatur Redevelopment Efforts." From Decatur, "The possibility of clearing Decatur's building demolition list could soon be presented to the City Council for consideration." City Manager Tim Gleason said an update on the city's neighborhood redevelopment efforts will be provided to the Council today during a study session. As part of the plan, Gleason said the possibility exists of raising an additional $2 million to $2.5 million line of credit, which could be enough to demolish the properties currently on the list in the next 2 years. Gleason has already suggested securing financing for up to $1 million this year for demolitions. "This is a big deal for the community," Gleason said. "I'm in no hurry to make a decision that's not the best for the community. I want to hit a home run." Gleason is looking to make a bigger impact than just tearing down houses. He said opportunities exist both before and after the structures are torn down. "The city should consider looking for ways to save on the costs of demolitions, including by salvaging what it legally can from the buildings," Gleason said. "The average $15,000 cost of a demolition could be reduced that way, in addition to the savings from demolishing a large number of buildings at a time," he said. "There are positive opportunities out there," Gleason said. "We will be looking for strategic areas to target. It will not be a shotgun approach." The city will seek to focus redevelopment to the west and north of downtown, adding to enhancements made there in recent years, Gleason said. Gleason acknowledged the need to work with area landlords to address concerns, as Decatur has a large number of rental properties. "Landlords have expressed concerns about tenants destroying property, leaving the building owners to cover the costs of repairs." "It goes on all the time," said Barry Zarzisny, Decatur Landlords Association president. "It's about how they will leave them. It's been going on for years." He said a tenant ordinance is needed to hold those causing problems responsible. "We need to find ways to build our relationship with landlords," Gleason said. "The expectation that homes are kept up will be an important component." Gleason said the city could help property owners find financing for rehabilitation work. In addition to the study session, the council will be considering agenda items related to infrastructure improvements, such as the annual water main replacement project. The council will consider approving an approximately $2.3 million contract with Burdick Plumbing and Heating for the work. And Tony Reed writes from Decatur, "Decatur flames burn bright on ice." As Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses growls out, "Welcome to the jungle," over the Decatur Civic Center sound system, the kids who go down to the ice armed with bent sticks got ready for another fast and furious game Sunday afternoon. The Decatur Youth Hockey Association was wrapping up its two-day Tournament of Friends, which included teams from Champaign, Peoria, Indianapolis, and the Quad Cities. The event is in its 27th year and is dedicated to the memory of Jeffrey Geohagan, a former Decatur player touched by the fire on ice that seems to burn in all Decatur Hockey Association players from 3 through age 18. Decatur 11-year-old Aiden Taylor, who wasn't playing Sunday, explains that he broke his foot in action last season, but clearly would no more give up hockey than he would breathing. "It's a very fast sport, just fun," he explained. "I love it so much, I want to be a professional." Aiden was watching from the bleachers as, amid bursts of rock music on the sound system, the Decatur Flames squirt team, hockey speak for ages 9 to 10, fought Peoria for third place honors, which the home team grabbed easily with a score of 6-1. They might have done even better had they not been exhausted from playing in this tournament Saturday, 8 a.m. start, and then dashing off to St. Louis for a 2 p.m. state championship in their age bracket, where they finished second after losing in overtime. They won it last year. Saturday was a 19-hour day, said Tricia Campbell, wife of assistant coach Zach Campbell and mom to Ian, who plays on the team. Like Aiden, her son has played since he was 5, and she says passion for the sport infects the parents as much as the kids. It's long season, October through March, and there's a lot of travel, said Campbell, who lives in Warrensburg. But for the parents and the players, it's a special kind of family atmosphere, as we spend every weekend together for 6 months. We're a special kind of crazy. Parents and players are crazy generous, too, and handed over a check for $13,000 on Saturday to the American Cancer Society. And the photographs that accompany this article, the first is a huddle of young hockey players with their coach. Coach Greg Lawson relays instructions to the Decatur Flames team that battled Peoria for third place in the Tournament of Friends, hosted by the Decatur Youth Hockey Association. Decatur won comfortably by a 6-1 margin. And another photograph showing the Flames scoring again and again against Peoria. Also on the local page, towns turn taxes toward economic development. From Shelbyville. Last fall, Shelbyville Mayor Jeff Johnson spent many evenings going from governmental body to governmental body in Shelby County. He was asking boards and councils to support Shelbyville's application for an Illinois Enterprise Zone, an area that would encourage new business through the abatement of sales tax on materials purchased for the business. Although the state hasn't yet ruled on the application, Johnson said the process has been good for Shelbyville's economic future. It's one more tool we can use to attract new business and new business expansion, he said. Shelbyville's tools include tax increment financing districts and business districts that allow the city to regulate property taxes and return other tax money to property owners in the form of improvement grants. Several historic downtown buildings have taken advantage of the plan, and other new businesses have opened on Shelbyville's west side. Property tax abatement programs and sales tax-funded development grants are being used by several central Illinois communities to encourage not only business growth, but also new residence construction. This month, Sullivan is expected to approve its fourth TIF district, something Mayor Ann Short said will attract new residents to the Moultrie County community. We have developers interested in several different forms of housing, Short said. By providing TIF services, we can give them a financial incentive to go ahead with their development plans. Sullivan has at least one TIF district for more than 20 years, Short said. TIF funds have provided not only advantages for new business, but upgrades to city facilities, including Sullivan schools and a new fire truck. We are fortunate to have the TIF and be able to use it in a way that benefits the entire community, Short said. In Pena, the city council is considering adding a business district after seeing the success of the plan down the road in Shelbyville. It's pretty clear it's working for Shelbyville, Pena Mayor Steve Sipes said. We would like to have the same assets available for businesses in Pena. The Pena City Council approved a $15,000 payment for city planning services in partnership with the Pena Pride Economic Development Committee last month. A public hearing on the proposed business district is proposed for later this month. You can't sit still and wait for things to happen, Sipes said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for March 6th, 2017. Please stay tuned.